How's it going, Reef Keepers? Welcome back to another episode of We the Reefers. I have uploaded this to Spotify, Samsung Podcasts, Amazon Music. I believe it's on YouTube or Google Music or Google Podcasts, whatever. I think it automatically draws from YouTube. Tell me if it doesn't. And then I also uploaded it to a couple of podcast indexes so that smaller podcast apps can pick it up. I have notably not uploaded it to Apple Podcasts, and I don't know that I will, so I apologize to Apple Podcast users. I was a big Apple Podcast guy for a long time. It's kind of disappointing. They make you jump through like a lot of hoops to get your content posted on Apple Podcasts. But without making the story, you know, any longer, it's way harder to get it on Apple Podcasts, and I just don't know that I have, I don't know if I'm up for it, basically. So maybe at some point, but don't hold your breath. I will say I don't subscribe to Spotify, but I'm able to listen to the whole podcast on Spotify. So I don't know if, like, you know, maybe you can listen to podcasts on Spotify. Like, they only want to charge for the music. I'm not sure. But you could try Spotify. Just, you know, download the app. And I think you just type in We the Reefers and it'll pop right up. In case you guys want the audio only version, I know most of you are, you know, I'm a YouTuber and most of you guys are YouTube centric, so it's probably not an issue. But yeah, it's out there for you to listen to now, and I will continue doing that after I post it on YouTube. You know, I'll convert it to an audio file and post it as a podcast just to listen to. And I'll try to keep audio listeners cued in if I do anything visual. I generally don't. It's generally you guys just get to experience my tank while I talk. But if there's anything I'm like pointing out or whatever, then I'll definitely like try to explain it better, try to remember to at least for listeners. So anyway, today I had a rare opportunity to turn around and do another podcast pretty quickly because one, I'm a teacher and it's spring break, so I get these weird breaks, which is like nice and not because my kid gets the same breaks. And so like it's nice to be with my kid. I like that. But regarding content, I can't generate as much content when I have a five-year-old hanging off of me for obvious reasons. So like, you know, basically this week I had this rare opportunity today to make this podcast because a relative happened to come to town and take the kid for a couple hours. So, you know, I got lucky today and I was like, well, I haven't fully thought through the subject matter of this podcast, but I'm going to do it anyway. So kind of bear with me. I'm probably going to, you know, kind of slowly pick my way through it because I've thought about it some, but I haven't like sat with it and really considered all the eventualities. And the subject matter of this podcast is Ryan Batchelor, one of the two founders of BRS, leaving BRS. He says for 12 months, okay? And what does BRS look like in the absence of Ryan Batchelor? So, because I think it definitely changes some things, at least changes some perceptions, right? And what I'm going to do, because I watch the Prestige Reef Dork podcast every week, and it just seems like Alex is so embattled every week with people being angry that the subject matter of the podcast does not come until like the last 30 minutes of the podcast. In order to avoid like commenting on that every time or like, you know, people getting mad about me not adding a timestamp for that, what I think I'm going to do, at least for now with this podcast, is I'm going to just launch into talking at you about the main subject matter of the podcast at the beginning so that if any transient listeners or viewers happen to want to hear about whatever the main subject matter is, they can, and then they can exit if they want to, if they're not interested in hearing like questions from you guys, which I have some questions from you guys to go over, you know, later after we get through, you know, the main bit of the podcast. So yeah, that's how I'm going to do it for now. I'm going to kind of reverse course from the first episode and handle, you know, this right from the outset. So let's start, I guess, when we talk about, you know, BRS, Ryan Batchelor, I guess you have to go, like, we'll start at the beginning. So, like, this is my understanding of the story, right? It's not, I haven't like deep researched this story. It's just stuff I've heard back in the day, that snippets of what he told in YouTube videos. So from what I gather, Ryan Batchelor, I forget if it was selling like pharma-grade supplements or reef chili. The first thing that he, like, his first venture into selling stuff, it might have been reef chili, and then he very quickly transitioned into also selling pharma-grade supplements for reefers. But he was a reefer and loved the hobby and was part of, you know, reef groups and in it, like, you know, in-person reef clubs, and basically had people who urged him, like, you know, you should, like, do reef chili or whatever, pharma-grade supplements, he started doing something that a lot of people were like, oh yeah, yeah, you know, we want this. And so he basically was like, okay, I'm gonna like do this, and got this guy Andrew on board with the, you know, his vision, his you know, business that he wanted to start. And Andrew kind of handled the business side of it, and then Ryan handled, like, you know, operating the day-to-day stuff and, you know, being kind of the go-to guy and the face of things. And basically they started out just being like a limited operation, and there was such a, you know, need or such a, you know, want from other reefers for what they were doing, that they slowly grew and, you know, brought more things into their wheelhouse. And you know, the business, I forget what year he's mentioned before, I don't know if it's like 2010 or at some point, the business, it was clear, it was like taking off, right? And it was still just owned by Andrew and Ryan for a long, long time, until, and again, this is my understanding of it, right? Until Bertram Capital, this, you know, venture capitalist group, was like, well, you know, something in the pet industry would make our portfolio, whatever, more well-rounded, or, you know, we could bring together all these disparate little companies that we see in this niche but high money hobby, and we could, you know, polish this up and, like, increase its value. So basically they came to Andrew and Ryan, and from what I understand, Andrew, Ryan's partner, didn't really care about reef keeping, like, at all. Like, he was like a pure business dude. And so, like, to hear Ryan tell it, like, pretty recently, I forget on what, you know, podcast or video I saw this on, but he was like, as soon as that, you know, as soon as we accepted the money, Andrew was gone, like, gone immediately. And then Ryan, being an actual reef keeper and more passionate, he ended up sticking around for longer, right? So that, you know, that's very broad terms story on this. And it brings us current to today, where a few days, you know, whatever day it was, a few days ago, Ryan Batchelor basically tacked onto the end of a BRS live stream, hey, you know, just so you know, I'm going to not be here. You know, I'm going to, for 12 months, I'm going to leave and go spend time with my family and whatever. And, you know, as people are, you know, a lot of people are, like, devastated because they're, like, you know, huge Ryan fans. And that plays into talking about later the impact of, like, him leaving, right? And there were people some people seemed angry. They're like, you know, can't believe this, like, whatever, like, you know, this, like, he shouldn't have sold the business kind of thing. Like, look, now it all fell apart. He's gone, you know. They're obviously bummed. And then there is a small contingent of people who are, like, good riddance. You know, you stuck around and, like, shilled for the biggest, you know, entity in the hobby that's kind of, controlling a big part of the market right now. See you later, dude. You know, go live on an island kind of thing with your millions. And I don't, like... So I'll say this, like, Ryan Batchelor, it's pretty undeniable that he did a significant amount of good for the hobby, especially, you know, up till, like, I guess the buyout, right? Or whatever you want to call it. I don't know if it was venture capitalist, what they do, it's a kind of a strange thing that we really have to look into, but basically, like, He accepted the money, right? And lost control of what of the business that he had built. However, like I'm not mad at a guy who takes the millions. You know what I mean? Like I can't, I've spoken on this before. I have the luxury of standing here and like throwing barbs at people who are in situations that I will never be in. I will never build a BRS. So I'm just a consumer, and I can be selfish from my consumer standpoint on so many things that are happening. So like I try to tamp that down and kind of, you know, parse things out and find the reasonable middle way in all this. And when I'm honest, it's like, you know, if somebody came to me and was like, you know, I guess this reef tank is like one of the great things that I consider that I've built in my life. If somebody came to me and was like, oh yeah, you know, I'll give you $1 million for it. Yeah. I mean, like I would take the $1 million. Yes. You know, this is one thing I've built that I'm like extremely proud of in my life. Despite that, like, would I take $1 million for me and my family? Yes, no doubt. So I don't fault Ryan Batchelor for that. And in fact, I think that like him building BRS from like the ground up, from like literally starting in an apartment, like bagging up, you know, supplements to sell to reefers who were dying for this stuff, struggling to find consistent, you know, sources for it on the market or whatever the, however the story went, like that's a great American success story, right? That's like, you know, for our hobby, akin to, you know, like Steve Jobs starting Apple in a garage with Woz. Like, I mean, that's like, you know, I mean, the reefing hobby is way smaller than like personal computing, you know, consumer device market. But like, yeah, I mean, like that's a cool thing. And so hats off to him. It was a ton of work. And he, you know, was the face of the company and built it into this, you know, attractive entity that, you know, big, big, big money looked at and said, hey, you know, that's compelling to us. Like, we want that. And now he gets to reap the benefit. Now all that hard work pays off. He's still not an old guy, and he gets to have that money and go live his life with his family. And hats off. Like I believe that should be able to happen, right? Here's where the water gets murky, and I'm gonna take a drink of water before I do this. I'm gonna try to pick my way through this. So, all right, drink of water, Haddon. So I was watching the Reef Dork live stream and paying attention to the comments, and you know, by the way, Alex is like a huge fan of Ryan Batchelor, and I guess I'll address that briefly. Like, you know, some people were like, you know, what a fanboy, geez, oh Pete's. I think that BRS to countries like, you know, to Europe, not a country, but you know, Europe as an entity, or like Australia, where they don't get a lot of Aperture products, not compared to what America does, to them, BRS is this like unique, impressive thing. Because, by the way, BRS was/is a unique, impressive thing compared to other entities selling gear, other houses of aquarium gear, because they actually did research. Like that was one thing that really, really catapulted their rise, is that Ryan specifically had this drive to actually do research, not just in products that they sell, but like reef research on like bacteria and light and coral growth and, you know, nutrients and like all the, you know, the Ryan and Randy years of research, you know, the golden age of BRS research, it's pretty undeniable that like they added a significant amount of understanding to like how to be successful in reef keeping. And then were able to also like bring gear into the mix. And yeah, it was helping them to sell gear, and it still helps them to marry that research with gear because they're going to sell more of it that way. You know, they get to choose what they test. So if they're testing like flow in a tank and they only choose like Vortex and Neros and like Ceche, like they're either like, you know, control the distribution of those companies, or those companies are in the Aperture umbrella. So all you're seeing and like, you know, being able to make this educated decision between based on the research video are like what they want you to buy. So like they're obviously even it's that kind of stuff is worse post Aperture, of course. Like now there's this corporate entity like sell to the people who are making these videos. But like they still basically just did that before. They wanted you to buy the stuff. I mean, that's part of it, you know. It just has a more of an emphasis on that now. But I think these other countries and continents, they look at BRS as like, well, we can't get this stuff here. So this is like a house of knowledge. Like this is like a reefing house of knowledge, and nothing in my country or on my continent is doing this. So like we're gonna watch these videos for the knowledge aspect of it more than the gear aspect of it. So to them, Ryan and Randy were the faces, and then just Ryan, you know, they had Randy taken away from them. And by the way, it was clear when Randy left that like a little bit of the mojo of the whole thing was lost. Randy's good. I mean, he was good at what he did. And a lot of people didn't know what they were missing until it was gone. And it's like, oh, wow, we're really missing this now. But Ryan kept on, you know, he kept on with it. And so now a lot of those viewers, people over across the ocean, they are disappointed. They're like, oh man, like, what are we going to do now? You know, like, it's not like BRS lacks, you know, staff to do this stuff. But Ryan was good at it. Randy, I think, was even better at it. And so now you're like, okay, you know, who's left? Like, Thomas the gear guy? Like, you know, Matthew, like, hyper bubbly yell at the camera guy? You know, it's like, there's definitely going to be a void, right? So I just wanted to address, like, I think there's plenty of sadness in America about this, but like I think there's a different perspective of, you know, being bummed out for people who, you know, couldn't just like, you know, get Aperture gear any day of the week. They used BRS for something else, right? BRS YouTube is way more important to in other countries, I think, in this late stage, as a knowledge point. So, all that said, to come back to you know, Ryan and people's feelings on it, in the podcast chat, when I was watching, or live stream chat, I should say, I'm watching Reef Dork, you know, there were a few people who were like, you know, expressing the sentiment that Ryan should not have sold BRS, you know, what a mistake or whatever. I already addressed, like, I think he's totally fine to sell BRS. And I think that, like, I think when people say he shouldn't have sold BRS, I don't think that they're saying, like, he doesn't deserve the fruits of his labor or he doesn't deserve his success story. I think that the people who would say that lack the, like, ability to properly frame what they're trying to say and or the knowledge to frame what they're trying to say, or they just don't want to say... They don't want to like make reef keeping about something else, and they're trying to express something, and they're struggling to do it. And I think that this is a common thing in the reef keeping hobby. So like reef keeping for most of us is an escape, right? It's an escape from, you know, 24/7 news cycle, you know, constant negativity, the drudgery of our office job, whatever. It's a, you know, it's an escape where we can just go and be with this thing that we love and do this like thing that consumes us, that takes us out of reality. So I sense a lot of times that on like reef keeping podcasts or shows or videos or whatever, it's like, you know, bigger names in the hobby will walk up to the line where like reality and like economics and, you know, control factors and, you know, all kinds of real world impact meets with reef keeping, and then they won't cross the line. In fact, some of them fling themselves backwards when they realize that they've approached the line. And like, I'll just say this before I get into it further, I'm not interested in backing away from that line. I'm interested in, you know, not charging across that line into the dark, like, you know, being, you know, I don't know, a numbskull about it. I want to pick my way through it with logic and reason, but I don't want to, on this podcast at least, I don't want to shy away from that or be scared of it or be worried about losing. You know, look, I hope I don't lose viewers over it, because I make videos every week that don't touch on any of this. This podcast is for people who are interested in, like, you know, towing that line or walking across that line and, like, really looking at some of the issues and some of the things that go on in this hobby. So, you know, all that being said, I think it's not so much Ryan taking the money that's a disappointment, but the what resulted from it, which is, you know, a group of hyper wealthy, powerful venture capitalists were able to bring together these unique, competitive, innovative American reef keeping companies, you know, BRS, Neptune, AI, and Ecotech at the core of their, you know, little reefing portfolio, so to speak, or their subfolder of their portfolio, and then start securing through the power that they gained, uniting these entities, start gaining exclusive distribution rights to a whole host of, you know, other companies like, you know, Refactory and Protobio and, you know, all these other, I mean, you can look in their Aperture homepage and see the litany of companies that they have secured control over how that stuff can be distributed in the United States, right? Once that started happening, I would argue that we saw an immediate, like, stagnation in innovation in the hobby. And actually, Ryan, who is not a gear guy, so it's remarkable to me that he said this and was aware of it, but Ryan, Prestige Reef Ryan, mentioned in a previous podcast how, like, 2018-19 seemed to be, like, the big year of, like, all the new awesome gear. And then he's like, what happened? I mean, obviously COVID happened, but he was like, you know, what's happened since? Why are we in 2024 and, like, you know, the gear in the hobby is basically static? In addition to COVID probably slowing down some of the R&D for a hot minute there, I think the other thing that happened really was Aperture, right? Like, it was my initial hope that, like, Aperture would infuse these companies with money and force them to work together so that, like, all of us would benefit. Like, we, you know, basically all these smaller companies had tiny war chests because they were operating on thinner margins, and now they would have this big load of money behind them, and they would, like, become these dynamic things. The apps would improve, the control of our devices would improve, the feature sets of our devices would improve, the devices themselves would go up in quality, they would come out with new devices that addressed, you know, various weaknesses and stuff like that with the existing bevy of devices. Not really much has happened, right? And I think that, was it 2020 that, like, they, I'm sure it was 2020 that talks of, you know, Aperture being formed and bringing all this stuff together happened. And I think a lot of the press releases on all of it were, like, the end of 2020 or 2021. So, like, granted, we're, like, 3 years in, like, there could be stuff in the pipeline, but really all we've seen is, like, pricing tiers that are, like, products or services be added. Like, oh, we're going to keep all of, you know, all of the Ecotech gear and AI gear, Bluetooth only. And then if you want to Wi-Fi control these things, you're going to have to utilize, you know, the Neptune Apex. So you have to buy that. And then you can buy another tier, which is an MXM module. Like, that is just literally, like, the clearest, like, you must walk through these massive price steps in order to gain full functionality of a multi-hundred-dollar device kind of like corporate approach stuff that just makes my stomach turn. I mean, that's like the everything wrong with like a big venture capital group taking over, you know, all these other little companies that were fighting each other for market share and continuously turning out better quality and more innovative products to benefit the consumer. And now that that benefit to the consumer is gone, prices have gone way, way up. And, you know, people can argue about inflation all day. I understand that, like, inflation's been bad, right? Look at your grocery bill. But I still feel like, you know, some of this inflation, and again, it's like, it's hard for the government to investigate whether inflationary expansion or, you know, pricing that shoots way up at companies is legit or not. So I can't just sit here and say with any knowledge that I like this is what's happening, but I absolutely suspect that there are lots, and it may or may not apply to Aperture companies, but like I suspect a lot of companies are like, ooh, let's just ride this wave to higher profits. I mean, corporate profits are higher than they have, like, at red hot levels right now. So like, to me, it's like, oh, you know, we have to raise jack prices up because labor's too expensive and COVID stuff. And like, I'm like, okay, but like, you know, wages are going up, but not at the same pace as profits. And like, guys, you're making record profits, right? So like, I don't know. I've just seen everything go up in the reef keeping hobby so much recently. And I'm like, okay, I'm just not seeing things developing in the direction that I hope they would with Aperture. And I think that a lot of people feel that way. And it comes out as Ryan shouldn't have sold Aperture. And I don't think that's what people actually mean, right? They're scared to say what they actually mean and get into this kind of stuff because nobody wants to like have the fight of like economic vision, right? But it's kind of like, unfortunately, it's inextricably tied to everything. Money and how our societies deal with money and how like politics factor into money and all of that stuff, it's all inextricably tied together. And you know, you guys know, I've said it previously, I'm an ardent capitalist. Like I'm an educated guy, and I've looked at, you know, hardcore socialism, I've looked at communism, I've looked at all these different, you know, ways of doing society and doing economics. And it's, as far as I'm concerned, it's pretty undeniable that capitalism provides the greatest potential for quality of life for the greatest amount of people, right? The question is like, how much capitalism, like not even how much capitalism, how are you going to do capitalism, right? And so like, I think that the core problem here for people who are struggling to articulate it, the core issue is like, you know, the core issue is this kind of stuff, like what's happened with Aperture. Like Aperture takes over all these little companies, innovation slows down, prices go up, they're controlling map pricing for all these smaller, you know, gear distribution houses that rely on part of those profits from Aperture gear in order to function. So they're scared to ever cross Aperture, and everything just slows down. That to me is like the opposite of what capitalism should be doing to benefit the greatest number of people and businesses. Like that, that to me is like a reduction in like the red hot competitive atmosphere that I think needs to be like in my, this is my version of capitalism. So, I mean, you can disagree. Absolutely. Like there's different ways of looking at it. My version of capitalism is that like the government, it provided the government, like our government in America, you guys know what I think of politicians, is corrupt, right? So like they're corrupt, they're bought, corporations pay for those guys to get reelected over and over again. It's very easy for big money interests to sway our politics, right? And our politics dictate how our economic system functions. And it's kind of become like people have become so used to this being the status quo in America. If you're from another country, this is kind of how it goes. People are so used to the status quo being this in America that I often, and it, man, it bothers me when people say this, but people will like not defend, but just kind of in a defeated way, they'll just be like, they'll look at the aperture situation and just be like, that's how it goes. That's just how things go in America. Like, you know, like eventually the consumer just loses and like, that's how it goes. Like, that's the way it is. And that always bothers me because like, it doesn't have to go that way. Like, I don't, like, we literally elect these people. Like, we can make the decision for things to just not always eventually wind up with like the biggest dog eating everybody else and raising prices and lowering service and killing innovation. Like, we don't have to do this. Like, we could actually elect politicians that are interested in like, you know, having some kind of regulatory system in place that looks at acquisitions and, you know, investments and venture capitalists, and with a critical eye and saying, okay, before this goes ahead, we want to see what the impact of it would be. Or we want to institute some kind of, you know, some kind of safeguard on, you know, and again, I don't know what this looks like, but like, we institute some kind of guard on, you know, map pricing to make sure that it's, you know, done fairly or whatever. Like, you know, there's got to be, like, I'll give you an example. You know, people in other countries may or may not have heard about this, but like, this is a way bigger example than reef keeping. Part of the problem for reef keeping, it has to be said, is it's a very small niche thing. So like, this small niche industry, there are so many bigger fish to fry at like the federal government's level with regards to like, you know, situations that are like bordering on monopolistic or outright monopolistic, that like, there's no way this is even on anybody's radar in Washington, right? But during the pandemic, there was a critical shortage of baby formula in the United States, which, that's pretty critically important, wouldn't you think? That's pretty dang important, all right? And this baby formula shortage during it, you know, when something bad happens, all of a sudden everybody's like, well, why is that happening? And it turned out it was happening, you know, because in addition to COVID happening, like, you know, making everything harder and, you know, production slowed a little bit. That wouldn't have been such a big deal if we'd had like, you know, a plethora of companies that were producing baby formula, because the companies, let's say that we're in like blue states with hardcore mask mandates and hardcore like work mandates and school mandates and all, you know, those factories could have slowed production, and other factories in other states, this is part of the strength, by the way, of America having like, you know, political variance, other states, red states that did not have that hardcore mandates on like, you know, workplace stuff, those factories and businesses that produce baby formula could have in theory ramped up production and filled the gap. But instead, we only have a very select few corporations that are like part of mega conglomerate corporations. We only have a few of them that make baby formula, come to find out. And in fact, some of those like mega corporations own multiple baby formula corporations under their umbrella. And, you know, maybe centralized factories, the way that Aperture's doing with bringing Neptune over to Pennsylvania so that they can watch all the production of Ecotec and Neptune stuff, you know, with a magnifying glass. Like, often those power structures want to bring all of that stuff together so that they can watch everybody and keep an eye on it and, you know, find out what's really happening over there. So that's like, you know, big mega corporate mentality that really bit us in the behind during the pandemic. And people with like little babies at the time were struggling. I was lucky that my kid had just phased out of formula. I remember thinking to myself, I like going to the store and there's no formula, like none. Like, the only formula was like soy formula, and the price had been jacked up by like 40% on it because it's like all that's available. Like, that shouldn't happen. These are babies. Like, and so it bothers me when Americans are like, yeah, well, that's just how it is. You know, it's just, I don't know. That's just, I don't really try to think about that stuff. It's stressful. Like, that's just how it goes. In my unesteemed opinion, that shouldn't just be how it goes. That shouldn't just be the way things are, right? But in America, foreign viewers, like, there is a pretty significant contingent of people, you know, a pretty significant part of our population. I got a lot of family like this who's basically, like, you know, bought into the idea that, like, the market will figure itself out and it should just be, like, unbridled economic, you know, capitalist chaos, and the government should not step in on anything. Eventually things will sort themselves out. And I'm just like, I mean, all you got to do is look for 5 minutes for an example, like the baby formula one. And it's like, yeah, but, like, is that again, like, who I'm concerned with is, like, the average consumer, like, you know, in our hobby, the average reefing consumer, in the broader, you know, context, the average American consumer. Is that really what's best? Like, is that babies, like, starving during the pandemic? Is that really like good? Like, should we maybe look at this? Like, yeah, I think we should probably really look at, like, what we're doing. And within that broader context, like, if you know, kind of zoom in on reef keeping, in my ideal world, like, if not when Bertram stepped in to do this aperture thing, then down the line, as, like, control and as control, their control over, like, innovation and, you know, different distribution houses, and as their list of, like, exclusive distributors grew, I think then it probably, in my perfect world, would have warranted a look. Like, hey, you know, we understand this is a niche of the economy, a very slim niche, but, like, it seems like a lot of power and control and money is being all funneled into one, is being funneled into one entity, and that entity is sort of breaking the nature of, like, capitalism, right? At least my version of capitalism, which is we try to spur competition and spur innovation and spur the best, the seeking of the best price point for the value for the average consumer, right? Like, that I think is, like, I don't know, but I would say that's most people's version of capitalism that they would like to see, is one, maybe, you know, not one that looks at such a niche sliver of the economy as reef keeping, but one that at least goes forth, like, with the spirit of, yeah, we want to, like, uphold competition, not allow, like, mega conglomerate corporations to just, like, you know, buy these massive portfolios of everything, and then it turns out that there's only, like, two viable major baby formula manufacturers in America. And so if anything goes wrong with one of them, half the country's babies are at risk. Like, that's not healthy. It's just not. I think most people would not deny, even, like, ardent, like, free market capitalists, that, like, that is probably not the best course of action, right? Like, when I worked in the private sector, for instance, like, the guy who ran our company, smart dude, he was like, it's critically important that we have multiple manufacturers in our, you know, bevy of things that we sell that do the same thing. Like, he refused to have only one manufacturer that we were united with that did one thing. Because he was like, if one of them goes down, we have a backup plan and we can figure it out from there. And we don't have to, like, stop selling a huge part of our line. And, like, yeah, that happened, by the way, during the pandemic. A couple companies that we, you know, like, relied on went down, but we had backups waiting in the wings that we also sold. So we were covered. I mean, like, that, as you reduce the amount of options for the market to tap into, you're gonna run it, like, it's gonna hurt business too. Like, it doesn't just, I'm most concerned with the consumer, but it's gonna hurt businesses too in the long run, if you have too few options out there because they've all been bought up. So to bring this back full circle, sorry to rant at you about, like, economics for a while, but, like, that's, if you don't like that the podcast goes there sometimes, it's probably just not the podcast for you. Like, I'm gonna go there sometimes. Like, yeah, like, I understand what people are saying when they're like, Ryan shouldn't have done this. in that I understand that that's probably not really what they mean, but they don't know how to get into like the things that I just got into. A lot of people just don't. They're just like, all of that, like Ryan said it, Ryan, Prestige Reef Ryan said that last night in the podcast. He's like, I don't really think about like anything outside of like my personal life and reef keeping. And there's a lot of people like that. And then they try to have an opinion and it comes out as, you know, dang it, Ryan Bachelor, you shouldn't have like, you know, cashed in on your success. Like, no, I don't think they really, if you pressed them on it, have a problem with that. I think few people have a problem with a success story like Ryan Bachelor, you know, cashing in all of his chips that he's earned rightfully and built a business on. Like, that's fine. I think it's the broader conversation that a lot of people don't know how to access or just, you know, lack the understanding of to articulate themselves. I think that's really like what that's getting at. So, however, this leaves this big question, you know, this big overarching question that all reef keepers who pay attention to the reef keeping hobby now have, which is what now for BRS/Aperture, right? Like, I'll tell you right now, it's not like they're at risk. It's not like they're going away. It's not, I mean, like, nobody has, I mean, some people do, very few, but nobody has the money to go, like, instantly replace all their gear because, you know, they were a Ryan fanboy and he's gone. And it's like, you know, we're not loyal to BRS anymore without our guy. Like, and I don't think that people generally operate that way anyway. So, like, immediate impact, like, on a business level, on a, you know, on a people buying stuff level, I doubt it's that significant. Especially because, and this is my opinion, okay? Might not be true, and it might not, I don't know that it's especially fair for me to even say this, because, you know, all we can take people at is their word, right? Taking Ryan Bachelor at his word, he's taking a break, and then he's gonna come back, right? That's the official word. He's gonna, for a year, he's just gonna chill out, and then he's gonna come back. And I could be totally wrong when I say this. I'm just throwing it out there. I don't think he's coming back. And even if he intends to come back now, right now, like, you know, first couple days that he's off the job, I don't see it. I just think that, you know, you have that kind of money that you rightfully earned. You're going to go take, you know, this sabbatical or whatever. I found it ironic that he described it as a sabbatical. He's like, that's what teachers do. Like, no, that's what, like, you know, the 5% of faculty who are tenured at public universities and make ridiculous money, you know, do. The rest of us never get to have a sabbatical like that. Like, in the middle of the part of the 9 months that, you know, we're working full course loads. Like, no way. But yeah, he's described it as a sabbatical. He's going to take this break. I just think that, like, you know, even if he intends to come back, he has little kids. Like, I don't know that they're little anymore. I think one of them might be, you know, like little, like maybe my daughter's age or something. Regardless, he's going to take this break. He's got kids at home and he's going to create a reef tank in his own house. And he's also going to go and travel and, like, you know, go scuba diving and be on beaches and, you know, vacations and, you know, tapping into all this stuff that he earned over building BRS. And he's going to be like, you know, if I were him, most likely, and, like, you know, whatever, if I were him, I'd probably be like, wow, this is pretty great. I get to just, like, hang out with my family, like, all day, every day. You know, my wife doesn't have to work because my company succeeded so much, and I don't have to work because, you know, I made it succeed so much, and I got all these years left ahead of me, and I'm having fun with my reef tank, and, you know, I don't know, you know, if he does come back, I bet you it's in a capacity that's like, you know, our guest founder, you know, is coming back this week for a special podcast or what, you know, like, I bet you it's like that. I bet you he never, like, he's going to go to the reef shows and stuff, he says. So I highly doubt that he goes away. I don't think he could. I think he actually does love reef keeping. Like, I don't think that's a lie at all. I think he actually loves reef keeping. So I'm sure he will be around. He will be a figure in the industry. but he's not going to be the front man for BRS. My call is he's not going to be the front man for BRS again. So what does that mean long term for BRS? Here's what I think long term. I think that it doesn't hurt BRS this year, next year, the following year. But I think after, like, you know, I don't know, like into year three of him not being around, if it proves that he does indeed not like come back, not fully, not as like a full-time guy doing full-time videos. If it does prove that way, I think that BRS's ability to tap into new reef keepers or like keep the undying loyalty of like early stage reef keepers, I think that it is diminished. Because he had, and again, like you got guys like Matthew who are, you know, hollering and bubbly, and you know, there's a certain contingent that likes that. And you know, you have like Hype Man Thomas, and there's a certain contingent that likes that. But I still feel like Ryan was like this perfect medium between certain personalities that they have over there, and it's very hard to get like this, you know, personality that like exudes what he exuded and is able to say things in an exciting yet calm enough way that you're not turning people off. And like, it just, it's gonna be very hard to like find somebody to fill those shoes. And if they don't, I think it does hurt them in like the early reef keeper to new reef keeper end, which long term will slowly kind of chip away at sales and stuff like that. But they're in a pretty darn good position. I mean, they have accumulated so many exclusive distribution right contracts with companies, and they have like the core big, you know, everybody wants it gear houses that, you know, exist in the United States, all united. If they're able to pull Neptune through this horrific transition they're going through, you know, they'll be pretty darn well positioned to weather that kind of storm and buy themselves time to figure it out. But it is interesting. Like it is an interesting thing to consider them without, you know, without either founder, without Randy, you know, and this like kind of mishmash cast and crew that they're going to try to go it alone into the dark with. Like, I don't, you know, on the like YouTube social media end, you know. So yeah, I'm curious. I'm curious to see how it pans out. But day-to-day operations and their whatever 10-year plan, or I don't think it changes much. Here's where it changes for like more experienced reef keepers, now that we've talked about the early stage people. More experienced reef keepers. So like I said a long time ago that I felt like Ryan was I felt like he wanted to stay and do it. He wasn't ready to leave his company yet. But I felt like, you know, the Aperture Bean Counters, the venture capitalist bean counters, they were like, yeah, this is great because we can like pull strings and institute price and service tiers and, you know, relocate companies and do all this, you know, stuff in the background that might attract a bunch of attention, you know, but it won't because like Ryan's out in front. And we'll do 52 weeks of reefing season 2. Maybe we'll talk about that in a minute. And like, we'll just keep him out in front. And then like these fairly experienced reef keepers who are like Ryan loyalists, we'll just see that. And that will take up press time. And like, you know, we can like realign everything in this corporate structure that we want to in the background without like getting questioned too hard. So I think he had like a value to Aperture in that way. That like, I'm not saying that they were like using him or hiding behind him in it. I think it was like convenient. Like, oh great. Yeah, go do 52 weeks of reefing season 2. Go do it, man. Like that's perfect. That's what we would have hoped for. And it's interesting though that like 52 weeks season 2, you know, my criticism of it early on, and by the way, I got destroyed for this criticism of it by a lot of, you know, BRS zealots early on when I when I talked about it a little bit, and I was like, okay, I guess I'm not talking about that because people feel very strongly about it. Early on, first few videos of 52-week season two, I was like, this really feels like an infomercial in disguise. Like when they're introducing the tanks, you know? Like, it felt that way. It's like, these tanks are overbuilt to the maximum with the highest end BRS exclusive gear, whether it's an exclusive distribution partnership or they, you know, they're truly like a core company under the Aperture umbrella. Every tank was just like banging full on, like, you know, hardcore 15, 20, 25, 30K tanks. And I'm just like, this is, like, this is a little much. Like, that, you know, it was extreme. I mean, it was pretty transparent that they were just, and like, again, can I fault them? They are a company trying to sell this stuff. And they had, like, a big corporate mentality entity take them over. So, like, I wasn't really surprised by it. But, you know, what, basically when I brought that up on various channels at the time, this is, like, before, I guess it was like before I got deep into YouTube. Oh my God, the dogs just, you know, tore me to shreds. Like, no, you know, it's going to get back to like it was in 52 weeks season one. You know, they're just introducing the tanks. How dare you? Blah, blah, blah. You know, like it's going to get back to the hard science. And we're going to get an episode a week and it's going to be like Ryan showing gear again. Just you wait and see. And it never really panned out. It was very disjointed. We get the talks and stuff that they're doing with like experts, like industry experts, biologists, like that stuff, there's value there. Those people are, you know, brilliant people that, you know, that kind of stuff should be listened to by people who want to get deep, deep into this hobby and really understand it. That stuff is valuable, but a lot of what they were doing during like tank showcasing and stuff like that, and even like some gear introduction, and, you know, some of it was okay. Some of it felt, you know, more like season one with more polish. Which is what I was hoping for, by the way. I wanted it to be like 52-week season one, where like every week we get like, what's a protein skimmer? What's a, you know, water changes? What, you know, like they would go through like how to do this. And I mean, I think that would have benefited them, by the way. Like basically they chose their existing group of money-making reefers over new people entering the hobby. When they chose to go this route with it, with this kind of like disjointed format that people couldn't really follow, but like, you know, their hardcore zealot BRS people, they knew would follow all of it. And so, like I said, some of it was valuable, some of it was infomercially, and it just kind of like there was criticism starting to get leveled from like people who were more on the fence about BRS. And I think that eventually, like Ryan, probably coupled with hearing that criticism and just the much higher production value, 52-week season two being exhausting. And I hope not, but maybe like Aperture putting some pressure due to some of the criticism and low views in comparison. I think that like he was finally like, okay, it's time for a break, you know? And like whether he comes back or not, like I still think that's a question mark. Whether he comes back. He'll be around, but... So yeah, I mean like 52-week season two was an interesting thing. I mean, I think it kind of sealed the deal with him being like, okay, you know, they're like the company's continuing, like I'm good stepping back. So sorry, I need a drink there. It's a lot of talking. Okay. Let's transition, because that was a lot. And I'm sure there's more to be talked about with it. But I'm tapped on that. I gave you guys 50 minutes of that. So, let's see here. I got a couple. Unfortunately, I posted my... I didn't know if I'd truly be able to do it today, if this family member would take my kid. And they did. And I had just posted... Like, I realized I just posted a request for questions like an hour before I started filming this. So, guys, look, if you're responding to that now, that whatever post I made, like asking for questions, just understand, like, the episode 3, I will put those questions on it for sure. But I'm going to roll with, like, a couple multi-part questions that I got from a couple people. The first is, like, very relevant to what we just talked about. This is from Dappled Light. one of my favorite people to hear from. I love getting comments from Dappled. Always thoughtful, really kind person. So what he asked was this. I'd be curious about your thoughts generally on the impact of big personalities in the hobby. Is it good to have well-known people to look to? Are they too easily bought by corporate interests? Does having recognizable faces help promote the hobby more broadly? So, I mean, these are... And then he said also he's interested in a longer discussion about aquascaping and reef tanks. And I told him that's going to be its own... That's going to be its own deal. I want to do, like, an episode on aquascaping in this hobby right now. And, like, what all goes into it and, like, where we've been with aquascaping and where we're going. And, like, I'm very interested in aquascaping for sure. So, so let's go with, you know, what's, you know, dead on relevant to everything we were just saying. So my thoughts about big personalities in the hobby and their impact, basically, I think it just depends on the person, right? And I know that's like a disappointing answer. It's not very exciting, but like it does. It totally depends upon the person. You know, I'm still like mixed feelings about, you know, Ryan staying on after the you know, Aperture was formed and the venture capitalists came in. It was kind of like basically what I'm saying is I think Ryan was very, very beneficial to the hobby. Very beneficial for a long time. Him staying on after Aperture took over, that was like, and again, it's his company. He's allowed to care about it after he sells it, I guess. But like that basically gave Aperture a ton of early credibility because like if Ryan stayed, it must be fine, you know? And so like, I don't really agree with a lot of the things or at least the direction Aperture's been drifting in and the lack of like innovation and like return on investment that I've seen for the general hobbyist. So I became critical of Ryan staying. Like I'm not like furious about it. I just think that it's like, dude, you know, I don't know. I don't think he was nearly as valuable, not to me anyway, after that. And so that kind of gets to the big money part of this. Like, you know, are they too easily bought by big money? Like, and again, that gets back to like the earliest part of this. Like, you know, do I hate anybody for taking the money? Not really. I mean, heck, people need money. I mean, it's, you know, if you look over the course of American history, like I know wages are like growing faster right now than previous periods. In comparison to the cost of a house, like we have like a $59,000 average income in this country. And like the cost of a house average, I know it's very different region to region, but like the average cost of a house is like $436,000 a year. Like, how does that compute? So like wages have not kept pace at all where they should be given increased productivity and increased inflation like over the years. And I understand that people need money and they're looking for ways to make money. So like, it's hard for me to look at people who are like, oh yeah, I'll take that sponsorship. I'll take that ambassadorship. I'll take, you know, they love this hobby and maybe there's no way they could have gotten that big tank without it. So like part of me is like, you know, I have a soft spot because I know that despite the flashy personality, the, you know, vlog style, slamming their face into the camera, like, what's up, Reef Squad? You know, like, those people. I'm like, there could be kind of a, like, story before this where they were, like, struggling. Like, you don't know somebody's situation, right? But I do think that, like, people do, by and large, just grab the money. And there has to be some people who, like, you would benefit the hobby better if you didn't take the money, man. And they just take the money. And it's like, you know, maybe they make fine money and they were doing this great service to the hobby. And then they just, you know, all they do is talk about like the company's gear every single video. They work in, you know, their AI Neuro powerheads or like whatever. Like, I don't know. There's got to be some contingent there that it's like disappointing that they would take the money. Yeah. I mean, I'm struggling to like come up with a particular, a person who's taken a lot of heat lately is, who, like, he's a verifying genius of DIY. Absolute genius DIY reefer. And, like, gear nut reefer. Like, but Devin at Reef Dudes, I see a lot of comments on videos of his and live streams of his, like, dude, like, could we get a little less talking about, you know, aperture companies over and over again? Could we get a few less commercials? Why am I seeing a commercial every 2 minutes? Like, you know, like, you guys might not know this, but, like, you can put mid-roll advertisements, they're called, into your YouTube videos. So I don't do mid-rolls. And I literally set the ad setting at the lowest setting. I would feel like a jerk, like, setting it at the highest setting. But separately, you can do mid-rolls. So, like, you can, like, place ads at various juncture points that, you know, throughout your video, like, in the middle of videos. So hopefully you guys aren't seeing any of those from me, because I, like, specifically chose not to do it. But, like, people are literally, like, I've seen several comments, like, all over Reef Dudes, because, like, dude, what is this? Like, what? And it's like, yeah, I mean, that guy has so, it's not that he has potential, like, he's shown it. I mean, that I have watched so many, I've gotten so much good from his videos, but I don't really watch his videos anymore, because, like, it is so heavy BRS aperture stuff, and it is so, so, so heavy on, like, advertisements on longer form content, that I'm just like, nah, I'll find something else. And so, like, yeah, I do, I mean, you know, there is a, and it doesn't apply all the time. So it's not like a blanket statement that I could make. Everybody's different. And there are certain people that I'm, like, disappointed when I see it go that way, because I'm like, oh my God, like, this person's freaking brilliant, you know? Oh my God. It's like, you know, now I just gravitate away from them and it bums me out. So, does having recognizable faces help promote the hobby more broadly? I don't know. I don't know that, like, until you get into this hobby, like, think about it. Did any of you know, like, who Ryan Batchelor was before you got into reef keeping? I didn't know who that was, you know? Did anybody know who Julian Sprung was? Not that he's, like, some big YouTuber or something, you know, but, like, did you know who that was? Did you know who Than from Tidal Gardens was? Did you know who Jake Adams was? You know, did you know Remy? Did you know Raj? I mean, like, these are all people who, like, all of us are like, oh yeah, you know, this is, like, common everyday stuff for us. We're looking for these people's content, or it's coming across our feed on the daily because the algorithms, you know, caught on, and we're seeking it. So, like, is there an impact to those personalities outside of the hobby? Like, do I think that, like, a dude whose hobby is fixing cars might be scrolling through YouTube one day and see Than from Tidal Gardens working to clean a giant skimmer, wearing a vest and suit that probably costs $2,000, and think that he's going to get curious enough to click on that, you know, weird quirk personality of wearing a suit with your arm half in a giant bucket of fish poop? I doubt it. I doubt that a guy who's, like, you know, not looking for reef keeping is going to be like, wow, that's compelling. Interesting. I'm going to click on this video. Oh, whoa. You know, that I want this hobby. I don't think that's happening very often. I think that, like, I don't know. It's so funny. Like, aquarium people are such an interesting, like, subset of humanity. And then reef keepers within the larger aquarium, the broader aquarium hobby, are such an even quirkier, weirder bunch. I mean, I think most people don't understand how niche this is. Like, when I talked about how niche this industry is earlier, why we would never, like, get any kind of attention, especially in the current system, from, like, you know, federal regulators in the end, it's because it's so impossibly small. It's so impossibly small compared to, like, just, like, goldfish. I'm serious. Like, I bet you that sales of single goldfish at, like, Walmart or, you know, PetSmart or whatever eclipse, like, profits in the reef keeping hobby in a given year. I would not doubt that. Maybe I'm, you know, not smart for saying that. I sound like a numbskull, but I really wouldn't doubt it. If there's more profit to be had in simple goldfish than there just that one species than there is in all of reef keeping. I wouldn't doubt it. So that's how much bigger freshwater is than what we do. So yeah, I don't think it's gonna move the needle on the hobby per se. I think that's a much more, maybe that's another podcast, is like, how could the reef keeping hobby get out there and market itself more. I think, by the way, like, I'm not all critical of BRS all the time. I think that, like, that Hello Reef thing, that's a pretty compelling thing. And I think there should be more of that. Fragbox is doing a pretty good package. My buddy almost did that. My best friend in real life. I was so close to getting him to do it. I was so excited. They ran a sale, and then the sale expired before he, like, got out of work and could could get on there and buy a Fragbox kit. But the price was right. He was ready to do it. So, like, that kind of thing, like, when, like, the Hello Reef package goes on sale and you suddenly get all the – and, again, you get 100 new people. 75 of them are going to wash out in the first couple months and sell all of it. But, like, you net 25, and then half of them, you know, have a tank wipeout in the first couple years, and they're done. But you may net 10 people for the hobby. That's part of the reason why it's so hard to grow the hobby, is that it's hard, period. So, okay, Dappled. I think I covered you. And then Cole, Herman or Herman, sorry, bud, I don't know. Cole says, what got me into the hobby? And how did I learn about it? So, like, this again, that is such a great question, actually, to transition off of Dappled's last question. Like, how did I learn about the reef keeping hobby? Let me take another drink. I'm talking too much. As per usual, thank you all for tolerating me. When I got into the reef, so, like, this is the thing about reef keepers. I don't know. I'm sure there's a certain contingent of reef keepers who go into, like, a mom pa's pet store where, like, the guy just has a little 25-gallon reef tank and is selling some clownfish and maybe a couple of leather corals or something as, like, a side project in the store, that you see that and go, oh, my God, I have to have that. That's probably, you know, like, seeing it in person's a big deal. You're like, oh, okay, you know, I want that. I'm sure some people get in the hobby because of an experience like that. Not me. I literally was just like, I swear, one day I just woke up and was like, I'm going to have a aquarium with coral and clownfish in it. And I had a little mom pa's pet store, and I had never been there, and I drove there, and sure enough, they had these, like, aging, you know, sickly clownfish. This was a terrible, they sold, like, illegal turtles and stuff at this store. It was not okay. All the, like, puppies were sick. It was so messed up. But, like, you know, here's these scummy saltwater tanks. So I buy, like, a Kenya tree and a Kenya tree coral and one singular old clownfish. And I ordered, like, a five... So dumb. I ordered a five-gallon Fluval Evo and set it all up with, like, the cheapest light I could find. Like, guys, this will blow your minds. I didn't even know. When the tank water started getting lower, I hadn't even considered evaporation. I had never, like, kept an aquarium. I just, like, launched in. I didn't have a freshwater aquarium before, not officially. Like, it was, like, a, you know, shared deal. So, like, I never had, like, my own thing that I was in charge of like that. So I took it when water evaporates out. And again, I was a young guy, you know, this is back in college. I was like, oh, well, I'm just going to pour more salt water in. It's salt water that's evaporating. I should just pour more salt water in, right? So, like, the salinity spikes, the Kenya tree dies, and then this horrible 5-gallon tank, algae starts blooming like crazy. And then while I was at work one day, my cat would sit and look down into the tank at the clownfish. And one day my cat just reached in, flip, and scooped that clownfish right out. And, like, I came home and was like, I'm done with this. This is a terrible hobby. People shouldn't do this. This is impossible. And I broke it all down. And I didn't come back to it. Like, I never lost the bug despite that failure. So, like, I literally, I still was like, after I got older and more mature, I was still like, I want that in my life. And so I went and got... I went and got a Fluval Evo 13.5. I was like, the bigger tank will solve it. And it, by the way, it did. But also, and again, credit where credit's due, watching 52 weeks of reefing season one, voraciously burning through all those videos, that also made it. as soon as I got to the video where it's like, oh, only fresh water evaporates out, you have to put fresh water back in, my jaw was just like on the floor. I'm like, that was it. Like that, I could have been in this hobby for years. And I just, you know, back then, when I first attempted it, none of that stuff existed. And not that I knew about, at least, if it did at all. So that was a game changer. And I was like, all right, I'm in. And so began the past 6 years of this being a cornerstone of my existence and learning everything about it that I could. And now I would say I'm like moderately successful more days than I'm not. So it's a lot of learning. Worst livestock purchase that I have ever made. Worst livestock purchase. Oh man, that's a good question. Guys, there have been so many terrible livestock purchases. Oh my God. Coral, fish, all of it. There have been so many bad ones. Most of the things that went wrong were like my fault. So I'm trying to come up with one that is like, well, okay. And this is, again, this was like when I first came back into the hobby. I bought coral frags that had just come in off the boat and had not been treated yet. So they hadn't put them on any, you know, new bases or anything. They were just attached to like these little pieces of live rock. I was there as they were taking them out of the bags. And the guy was like, I haven't processed any of these or inspected them yet, but you can have them for 25% off if you just want something right now, because I'll take the sale. So ill-advised. Never do this. I was like, yeah, I want these mushrooms right here. And they literally had, what is the algae called? Bryopsis. They were covered in bryopsis. And the guy goes, you see the algae, right? I'm like, yeah. I was like, I've killed algae before in my tank. He's like, okay. Yeah. So I literally brought bryopsis here. And then there was still bryopsis. And I put it in this tank right in front of, like, this, my main reef tank. And it wasn't until I got that fox face that I eradicated bryopsis. For whatever reason, fox face just ate bryopsis like a pig. So I got lucky there. But bryopsis is no joke. Bryopsis sucks. All right, let's see here. What are some tricks that you use to keep the cost down on my tank? My number one trick is just telling myself no over and over again. Because honestly, that would be my biggest cost, is just like never stopping and buying new gear and swapping everything out. And, you know, that really, I mean, I mean it as a joke and in all seriousness, like I just saying no to myself and being like, you have something that works already. Stop. By the way, that's a lot of us, I think. But as far as like, just like tricks of like how to, I guess like this isn't really a trick, but it's the thing I think that has saved me the most noticeable money, I guess, like, you know, month to month or, you know, quarterly or whatever, was going to Kalkwasser as my foundation primary dosing, because Kalkwasser is so cheap. And then my dosing of alkalinity, calcium, and magnesium, my three-part dosing, it Kalkwasser lowered the amount of three-part dosing so significantly that I have to do, because most of the alkalinity and calcium needs are completely met by the Kalkwasser. So I'm just about maxed out on like the Kalkwasser. Like, you know, I don't dose Kalkwasser like through a traditional method. I actually like, you know, just dose a set amount of it every day. It doesn't naturally come through like a, it doesn't come through like an ATO. Like normally an ATO goes into a Kalkwasser reactor and the ATO causes it to overflow into your tank. So you're like truly maxed out on the amount of Kalkwasser you can use. I pegged my evaporation rate in the course of a day at like 2,400 milliliters and then set a set amount to dose to the tank at 2,200 milliliters so that I would not exceed the evaporation rate. And so I approach it differently, but still, even not fully maxing out the potential of Kalkwasser, I am using so much less three-part to keep my levels precision dialed into where they should be. And I dose a little bit of like 10 milliliters a day of, what's it called? Oh, Alpha Reef. I dose like 10 milliliters a day of Alpharif just as a little booster for all the primary elements and as my like trace element cocktail. So that's how I dose, and that has really saved me a ton of money on what I was paying for 3-part in the course of like a one quarter of the year before. Yeah, great question. So that's it for questions. I'm sorry if people are posting questions and they're like, you know, where's my question? I posted one. Like, if for this last hour and 15 minutes you posted questions, I promise you they will make it onto the third episode, the third installment of the podcast, which I don't know when it will be. I probably won't be able to record that this week. That would probably be like next week or the following week. Obviously, I'm not on any kind of release schedule. I thought it would be a month until I posted this one, and it literally is like a few days later. But we had big stuff go on, and I wanted to talk about it. And with spring break happening and me, you know, watching my kid right now, you know, over break because we share that same break, like I didn't know when I could do this again. So I appreciate you guys listening or watching. And please feel free, actually, like instead of me just like wait posting questions and waiting for them, waiting for answers to it, like, you know, I don't know, instead of that method, like, I guess I'll still do that just in case people don't get to the very end of this podcast. But guys, feel free, in addition to discussion's my favorite part of all of this, you know that, in addition to just discussing whatever part of this podcast you want, in the comments on YouTube, please also feel free to post questions for the next podcast. I just take out my phone and take pictures of the questions that come in and put them all in an album. And then, like, I go through those questions, and then I just clear the album out and start again. That's how I'm going to do questions. You know, that's a janky way of doing it, but, like, it keeps it all together in one spot. So when people ask various questions in various different response, you know, mediums, like, I can bring it all together. But, yeah, feel free to ask questions for episode 3, for sure. And tell me how you guys are enjoying this. Do you like the format of me, like, starting out the podcast with the big ticket item and then, you know, shifting into focusing on what you guys want to know after that? Because I kind of liked that. I thought that after talking about such intense subject matter, it was nice to like slow down and just like relax and like do your questions after. So I liked it, but I want to make sure you like it. And yeah, guys, if anything ever crosses your, like, anything of interest in the industry or, you know, biologically or whatever, if it ever, you know, like, you guys ever encounter it, hop on my Instagram. It's the same deal, Kalamazoo Reefer. Send it to me in a message. If anything, you know, whatever. I had somebody interestingly say on the last podcast that, like, they felt almost like I was, like, doing a reporter kind of thing or a journalist type deal with the first episode. And I don't know that I want to like have like the news and reefing, you know, I don't really want to do that, but I do like that, like the notion of following what's going on in the industry kind of loosely and then speaking to it from a, you know, like a point of view where I'm going to bring some doubt or throw some like, you know, critical thought or just some logic at it and see, kind of parse through it and think about it deeper than, oh, you know, so-and-so acquired who, or this new product came out, but only these people can sell it, or, you know, well, they banned these fish, or, like, whatever. I don't want to just, like, oh, news, just an item of news, okay, goodbye. Like, I actually want to look at that and have that often be probably the top thing that we look at on the podcast every time I do it. But I want to get into other stuff too. I'm literally Dusk will laugh because I'm like doing like graduate level research on what he sent me, but he sent me some of his planning methodology, one of my core subscribers, and it's so good. I mean, this guy is such a better planner than me on so many levels that I'm literally like studying the process of it and generating my own notes on it so that I can do a podcast that like walks through planning. So like that's one. I told you the aquascaping one, like I want to do that. You know, I got to learn some more about that before I get into it. But like, yeah, if you guys have ideas, like, you know, big ideas or like things going on in the industry that you want me to bring attention to or whatever, I do. I want to like critically look at some of this stuff and have those be like centerpieces of future episodes. So yeah, that's all I got. I appreciate, I just understand, I could not like do this without you guys having like spirited discussion with me and, you know, supporting this effort. I really couldn't, like, I wouldn't have enough, guys. I wouldn't have enough material. I wouldn't have enough confidence that anyone was interested or cared. So please, like, your support and your involvement in, like, discussion and helping me critically think things through and look at it from different at items from different perspectives, it is crucial to, like, me being able to continue doing this. So I'm asking you, continue what you're doing. I so appreciate it, all right? And I hope everybody has a great week. Have a good one.